Welcome to Shattering Mess. Excuse my late introduction there, but the story just caught my eye and I wanted to prepare it for presentation. This program is devoted to the largest and fastest growing segment of society, to those of you who know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yada, and our number is 877-376-45. The headline reads, Islamic State Militants. Now, just to say Islamic State Militants, I mean, that's a mouthful. They are Islamic. There's nothing un-Islamic about them. The President of the United States is an overt liar when he says they are not Islamic. They are the closest representation on planet Earth today to Muhammad and those who followed him some 1,400 years ago. They are living the Quran as if the Quran's every word mattered. They are fundamentalists. They are not extremists. State. Yes, they are operating as a state, even though the president says that is not the case. They are operating as a state, unlike any Islamic organization prior to them, with the possible exception of Hamas. Hamas operates as a state, even though it's an Islamic terrorist organization. It's just that Hamas does a very poor job of operating as a state, and a only slightly better job of acting as terrorists. The Islamic State is very good at both. Very good is a relative term. It's relative to what Islam can produce. It's the world's dumbest religion. And so there are extreme constraints on what a Muslim state can produce, just because of the stupidity of the religion and the foul and destructive nature of the religion of Islam. Militants. Now, I would ask you, is that like just being completely verbose? Why do you need to add the word militant? Who is part of the Islamic State that isn't militant? In fact, I would say this. When you say Islamic, aren't you automatically saying jihadist? Aren't you automatically saying terrorist? Now, for those of you who are politically correct and don't like the connection between Islam and terrorism, the fact is that all good Muslims are terrorists. That's not my opinion. It's the irrefutable presentation of the Quran. No. If your argument is that all Muslims aren't terrorists and that most Muslims are peaceful, then you don't know the definition of a Muslim according to the Quran, which is the definitive textbook on Islam. According to the Ninth Surah, all Muslims are terrorists. The moment a Muslim ceases to support jihad, which is an armed struggle to subject others to the control of Islam with all weapons that can be mustered, a fight to the death, according to the Quran, that any Muslim who does not support or engage in jihad ceases to be a Muslim. Therefore, you cannot be a Muslim unless you're a terrorist. So why do we even have to say militants? And if we're going to use the term that is ubiquitous with the religion, why don't we use the religious term? Jihadists. It's fully applicable. Why don't we say Islamic State jihadists? Why don't we say Islamic State mujahideen have entered the... Now, this is the realm where we move into make-believe. The Palestinian refugee camp. There's no such thing as a Palestinian. But nonetheless, there are refugee camps, not because the mythical people known as the Palestinian are refugees because they were pushed out of their rightful homeland, but because they lost three wars that they started against Israel, and that the their fellow Muslims, asked them to leave Israel so that the Islamic Mujahideen could be more successful in wiping every Jew off the face of the earth, destroying Israel. But anyway, this is the interesting part of this, once you get through the rhetoric, is that the Islamic State jihadists have entered the Palestinian refugee camp, Yarmouk, in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Activists and Palestinian officials say. Yeah. I mean, there are two aspects of that are telling. One of them is that on this program, about 6 months ago, in a discussion with IQ al-Rasuli, in trying to map out where the Islamic State was likely to go and where they were not likely to go, I said the most likely next move for the Islamic State is to move towards Jordan. That their goal will be to initially bypass the pro-Assad capital of Damascus, but to move towards Jordan and to incite the so-called Palestinians to rage and to join them. Well, that's what they're doing. Clashes erupted between militants and groups inside the camp, which the Islamic State is seizing control of in large parts of the suburbs of Damascus. Now, for the Islamic State to be in Damascus and to have the United States celebrating what they say is a partial liberation of Tikrit, which means that it's not being liberated, it's that part of Tikrit is now under the hands of Shia Muslims and Shia Muslim militias, as opposed to Sunni Muslim militias. If that's liberation, then I'd just as soon be a slave. That while they're, America is bombing on that side of the Islamic State's territory, they've reached out to the suburbs of Damascus. That's in the far southwest of Syria. That's a very long way away. That's a cause and consequence America didn't calculate. Now, what's striking here initially is that they went into the so-called Palestinian territory, the refugee camp, and are fighting for control. Who are they fighting against? Now, there's only two groups that control the lives of Palestinians. They're both fundamentalist Islamic. One is the PLO, and the other is Hamas. Now, you would typically think that Hamas and the PLO, and since they're both Sunni terrorist organizations, would be arm in arm. AK-47 and AK-47 with the Islamic State. But you see, in the nature of a crime syndicate like Islam, it's like two mafia dons trying to expand their territory into the other's turf. And there are wars. There are conflicts until one of the mafia dons controls the other. Now, in this case, the Islamic State is vastly better managed, better equipped, more popular than any organization that's part of the PLO or Hamas. So you're having the leaders of the PLO or Hamas trying to retain their control over the refugee camps, and yet what you have is the Islamic State fighting those individuals so that they gain control over those camps. And what they will do is that once they have gained control, they will incorporate them into the Islamic State. They will have a pressure point right outside of the gates of Damascus, which is exactly where Yahweh said they would go. And they will have more recruits. And eventually, what you're going to see is the names Hamas and the PLO will only be used in the West, that eventually the Sunni Muslims are going to unite under the umbrella of the Islamic State, and principally because to not do so, they will lose the turf war. And the leaders of those other terrorist organizations will have the opportunity to capitulate or die. The UN says about 18,000 mythical people known as Palestinians. Oh, it's not just the term mythical people that might rub people wrong. I mean, the term Palestinian is a marketing myth. It is so repulsive to refer to a people as Palestinians and a place called Palestine that I can't even say it without having to warn people that it is an overt and deadly lie, a disgusting, abominable lie. In fact, there may be no lie more disgraceful than that one, because that lie was imposed by the beast that Yahweh calls the most repulsive, the most deadly, the most vicious that has ever infected humankind, and that's the Empire of Rome, which grew into the Roman Catholic Church. That's who imposed this lie. This is the country that destroyed Yahweh's temple. This is the country that ravaged Yisrael not once but twice. This is the country that created the most disgusting religion in human history, Roman Catholicism. It's not the most deadly, but it is certainly the most repulsive. And so here you have a myth based upon the Romans using the name of a long extinct people to change the name of the province of Yehuda to Philistia, just as Hadrian wanted to change the name of the capital, Jerusalem, to his own name. It doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it true. And anyone who repeats that term, believing it's true, is disingenuous. Eyewitnesses and media reports said that the Islamic State fighters had entered the camp from the neighboring suburb of Hajar, Aswad. Islamic State, this is now is, and it's amazing so many people are referring to them as ISIS. And they're not ISIS. It's just not ISIS. I mean, they're most certainly not ISIL, and they're not ISIS. They're the Islamic State. And since saying the acronym is in that it's the most common verb in English, probably isn't the right way to go. So why not just refer to them as the Islamic State? At least this particular article, which comes from BBC, is using IS rather than ISIL or ISIS. But Islamic State militants have seized large swaths of territory in eastern Syria and across northern and western Iraq. Of course, we know that. But Damascus is in the far extreme southwest corner of Syria. Eyewitnesses and media reports said that they had entered and now control large parts of the camp. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a monitoring group, of course, which is right there in the camp with them. An official with the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO. So we have terrorist groups now battling for control. When you have that, it's no different than the mob battling for control of territory and who's going to be able to fleece the people. This is Islam being the criminal enterprise that it was conceived to be. So an official with the PLO based in Damascus also told the media that the majority of the camp had been seized by the Islamic State. First built for the mythical people known as Palestinians fleeing the 1948 Arab-Israeli war. Now, there ain't nothing about this true. There are no people known as Palestinians. There's no race known as Palestinians. There's no nation of Palestine. In fact, there wasn't even a reference to Palestinians or a people or a nation called Palestine in 1948. All of that emerged after the Muslims lost their three attempts to defeat Israel militarily. And they did not build the camp for these Muslims who were fleeing. No, the Muslims were simply getting out of the way so that the other Muslims, better armed, would have maneuvering room and could wipe the Jews out in the great jihad. And it's not an Arab-Israeli war. It has nothing to do with Arab. This is not a racial conflict. It's a religious conflict. And it is an assault by Muslims on Israelites because of the Quran. This is Yarmouk has been besieged by fighting between government troops and rebel forces since 2012. In March, UNRWA, a UN refugee agency for Palestinian refugees, said the extreme hardships faced by Palestine refugees in Yarmouk, but also in other locations in Syria, is the result of the armed conflict, and it's now unacceptable. Bull. The conditions faced by these people is because these people are isolated there as a blight for the specific purpose of making Israel look bad. It has nothing to do with Israel. Israel didn't push them out. Israel invited them to stay. The ones that did stay were given full citizenship. They became the healthiest, most prosperous, freest, and best educated Muslims in the world. And the ones that left and are under the control of fellow Muslims, well, they're faced with, according to the UN, with unacceptable hardships and human suffering. Who is perpetrating it upon them? Their fellow Muslims. Tells you all you need to know about Islam. In Israel, Muslims are treated well. Outside of Israel, they're treated horribly. Well, now you have the most popular Islamic organization in the world, the Islamic State, vying for control of areas that have been under the thumb of the PLO. Now, if you have a favorite in that fight, I dare say there's something wrong with you. That is a fight where if both sides lose, that would be a victory for humanity. The longer they fight, the more vicious their fight, the better it is for the rest of us. There aren't many situations where lose-lose is actually a win-win scenario. But in this case, the Islamic State v. the PLO is a lose-lose game that is win-win for the world. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I had hoped it would not be the case, but it nonetheless is. Saudi troops. Now, these are not bombers. These are not American warplanes being flown by American-trained pilots bombing Shia Muslims in Yemen. Saudi Arabian troops, ground forces, clashed with Yemeni Houthi fighters. And so let's phrase this as it should be. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is a private estate, the most fundamentalist Muslim country on earth, sent troops, its army, equipped with all American weapons, to go kill Shiites. And they did. And so the Sunnis and Shiites clashed on Thursday in the heaviest exchange of cross-border fire since the start of the Saudi-led air offensive last week. Well, unless these boys have wings on their backs, This has nothing to do with an air offensive. This isn't Saudi Arabia flying, pretending to be America and flying bombing missions over another country. This is hand-to-hand combat. This is a invasion. Saudi Arabia is leading a coalition of Arab states. Why don't we just say the truth? I mean, it has nothing to do with Arab. Good God, it has nothing to do with Arab. Reuters, come on, wake up. This is a religious war between Sunnis and Shias. Saudi Arabia is leading a coalition of Sunni Islamic states and a six-day-old air campaign, which is now a ground campaign, against the Shiite Houthis, who emerged as the most powerful force in the Arabian Peninsula's poorest country when they seized Yemen's capital last year. Saudis say that their aim is to restore President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi. Now, why would they care about that? I mean, Saudi Arabia isn't, it's not a democracy. It's a dictatorship. And so, why would Saudi Arabia want to restore? It's not like it's a popularly elected government. It's not like Saudi Arabia would even care if it was. The reason is that Saudi Arabia is a Sunni fiefdom. And the Sunnis hate the Shias. And because of America's invasion of Iraq, the Shiites have grown in power vis-a-vis the Sunnis. And so Saudi Arabia has engaged in all manner of fighting there. They were the first to arm, along with Qatar, which is also a Sunni fiefdom, the jihadists and mujahideen, mostly al-Nusra, in Syria. And they then became the arms supplier to the Islamic State. So they're trying to fight the influence of Shia Islam via proxy in Iraq and in Syria. And now they're doing it directly, not through proxy, in Yemen. We've unleashed the beginning of World War III. The Saudis say that their aim is to restore the president as if he has legitimacy. The Houthis are allied with Saudi Arabia's regional foe, Iran. Well, why would Saudi Arabia, you know, if you're going to try to understand this, why would Saudi Arabia view Iran as a foe when both countries are Islamic? So again, go right down to the roots of Islam. It is a criminal enterprise. In the Islamic cartel, various mob bosses are fighting for turf. When mob boss Shiite, the mob boss of the Shiite criminal organization, gains territory, as they did following the American invasion of Iraq, then the mob bosses of the Sunni criminal enterprise have to defend their turf and push back. And so that is what you're witnessing here. It is no more complicated than that. If you understand Islam is a criminal enterprise and nothing more than a criminal enterprise, and you understand that this criminal enterprise has two distinct bosses, and within those two, there are additional rivals, like the Islamic State and the PLO. The Islamic State and al-Nusra. And then there are allies like the Islamic State and Boko Haram. Once you understand that, the rest of this is very easy to piece together. You'll know who is doing what to whom and why. So the Saudi Arabians are allied with fellow Sunni Muslims. And the Houthis that overthrew the Sunni government in Yemen are allied together against one another. The Yemeni government units that are backed by the longtime ruler Ali Abdullah Saleh was toppled 3 years ago during what was called Arab Spring demonstrations. That was the Islamic Reformation. Then, when Islam is reformed, it becomes exactly as I said it would. It becomes nothing but conflict. To return Islam to its roots is to return to the days of Muhammad, where he was a criminal and a terrorist. The conflict has brought civil war to a country already on the verge of chaos and forced Washington to evacuate its personnel from one of the main battlefields in the secret U.S. drone war against Al-Qaeda. Yeah, this is how America has been so stupid. Because the Abominator has routinely said that America is not fighting a war against Muslims, even though 100% of its drone targets are fundamentalist Muslims and usually Muslim clerics. And instead fighting a war against Al-Qaeda and trying to differentiate Al-Qaeda from Islam, which is impossible, and fighting a symptom, citing that Al-Qaeda was never important, had no merit apart from the United States using it in the 1980s, and now is a completely irrelevant. But the very fact that the United States continued to use drones to fight back the Sunni Mujahideen that had allied with AQAP, which was primarily a marketing internet presence, the only viable threat to the Shiite Mujahideen in Yemen was obliterated by America. So in our thirst to fight a war against Al-Qaeda, and since this organization in Yemen used the name Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, even though they had no endorsement, it wasn't a franchise of Al-Qaeda, that they were the primary buffer to the Shiites. But we bombed them out of existence. Consequence, the Shiites take over the country. And now what does America do? It pulls its troops out of the country. It pulls its drone bases out of the country. It pulls its diplomats out of the country. Another miscalculation by the United States, because our leaders are completely ignorant and almost totally irrational, as well as resolutely immoral. Residents and tribal sources in North Yemen, by the way, they're one and the same, reported artillery and rocket exchanges along several stretches of the Saudi border. Explosions and heavy gunfire were heard, and Saudi helicopters flew overhead. In the southern port of Aden, Houthi fighters and allied army units, that's it, much of the army. You know, when you cobble together an army, as Yemen did, and as Syria did, where the officers are your religious sect and the rank and file are an opposition religious sect, you have a tendency to put yourself in situations where the rebellious sect will have army units and army equipment that will fight against the government. And that's what we're seeing in Yemen. They're trying to capture the remaining parts of the forces that were loyal to the Sunni president. At least 40 people were killed yesterday when the Houthi forces shelled a community of people that were loyal to the former government. So she is murdering Sunnis. And then jets from the Saudi Arabia coalition bombed the Shiite positions around the airport. The government in exile, now based in Saudi Arabia, is calling for Saudi Arabia to escalate their war into an all-out invasion. You think that the Abominator's policies in the Middle East have caused a problem? When are the I Love Obama and the, you know, Rising Sun Obama bumper sticker aficionados going to realize what a disaster this man has been and how he has thrust the world into war because of his rhetoric, because of his duplicity, because of his overt dishonesty, because of him favoring Muslims, protecting Muslims, encouraging Muslims, arming Muslims, and undermining the only government that can actually defeat Islamic territorial advances, Israel. Bonner, we were reading his comments where he called Netanyahu's tizzy fit. That was the term that that John McClown used to describe the Obaminator's repulsive actions towards Netanyahu. And, of course, Boehner just said the attitude of the president towards the head of state of Israel is reprehensible. He was quoted yesterday saying, how can you have a two-state solution when you don't have a partner in that solution? When you have a, when you don't have a partner for peace, when the other state is vowing to wipe you off the face of the earth, until there's a willing partner, there is no two-state solution. The president, he would be speaking of the Abominator, doesn't want to talk about the threat of radical Islam. Now, you and I know that there is no such thing as radical Islam. And to use the term is to be disingenuous. Is it better to say doesn't want to talk about the threat of radical Islam than to go to the Abominator's position where he won't even mention Islam and he speaks of the threat of violent extremism? You know, he had a conference on violent extremism. And even though virtually all of the world's violence is being perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims, he never mentioned Islam or Muslim once in his very long speech, but some 30 times used the term violent extremists. And so the president is at the far side of dishonesty. I mean, you could not be more dishonest than he is. But the question then becomes, is the half-truth better than the outright lie? The Abominator is pontificating an outright lie and saying that the world has a problem with violent extremism and completely disassociating Islam from it. You couldn't be any more dishonest than that. But I would tell you that the half-truth may be worse, where you use the term radical Islam or Islamic extremists. That's true to the extent that you've recognized that Islam is responsible. It's untrue if because you're suggesting that there are two versions of Islam, a moderate and peaceful Islam and an aggressive extremist radical Islam, and that's not the case. There is only one Quran, one Muhammad, one Allah, one Hadith, one Sunnah, one Sharia. There isn't a different set of scriptures. There isn't a different interpretation of those scriptures. There isn't a different prophet. There's not a different set of sayings from the said prophet. In Islam, there is only one Sirah, a biography of Muhammad, written within 300 years of Muhammad's death. In Islam, there's only one history that was compiled within 300 years of Muhammad's death. It's the Tariq by Al-Tabari. In Islam, there is only one Quran. And so all of those sources describe Muhammad in exactly the same way, as the head of a criminal enterprise, as a ruthless terrorist. So, folks, you're dealing with half-truths when you speak of radical Islam and Islamic extremists. You have to use the term Muslim. And you have to recognize that a Muslim who is not a jihadist is a hypocrite. That a Muslim who is not a mujahideen is a fraud. That according to the Quran, a nonviolent Muslim is no longer a Muslim. And so you can use the term Islam to represent terrorism because all good Muslims are terrorists. That's the Quran's definition. So he says the president doesn't want to talk about the threat of radical Islam and the fact that he has a strategy to that he has no strategy to deal with it. Oh, yeah, he's arming it. And when you begin to see all of these leaks that have probably come out of the White House in terms of the Iranian deal that was and the way that it's starting to shape up, there's a lot of concerns in Congress. And these concerns are on a bipartisan basis that the administration is completely out of touch with reality. Actually, the administration is presenting the antithesis of reality. He is fanning the flames of world war. Leaks about the ongoing negotiations, which are supposed to wrap up at the end of this month, and as you know now, they did not reach an accord, even a bad, they weren't even able to celebrate a horrible agreement, and all they've agreed to do is to continue talking, which is all they've agreed to do over the past 10 years, is to continue to talk. And they say, you know, we're struggling over some of the details. Well, the details they're struggling over is Iran's ability to develop a bomb and the sanctions on Iran. So those are the primary issues. They don't have resolution on them. And you can be assured that if the West triumphs, trumpets an agreement, that agreement will not preclude Iran from completing their nuclear ambitions. And at this point, both sides of Capitol Hill, Democrats and Republicans alike, are committed to the same story, to exposing the fraud that is abomination. We'll be back.